the celebration of Purim is not only a matter which has to do with Yud Aleph and Tezvov. Maybe the Mishnah expands it, the Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Gimel as well, the first Mishnah in Masechta Megillah. But it also has to do with firmly rooted in the Chodesh and Chodesh Adar itself. Here are, off the top of my head, two proofs to this. One is we have the Yerushalmi that says that if a person is leaving home for business, traveling, and he's not going to be in a place where there's a Megillah, and Yud Aleph Tezvov, so from Rosh Chodesh on, he should read the Megillah before he leaves. So that speaks to the fact that the Chodesh is significant in terms of the celebration of Purim. There's Chodesh is Choshev. There's a second raya. There's a second raya for this. And that is that we read of the poor, the Goyrel that Haman made. So he came out of Chodesh Adar. And he was all elated because Moshe Rabbeinu died in Chodesh Adar. And the Gemara says he didn't realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was also born in Chodesh Adar. Meaning that the Chodesh itself was Mesugal, had properties within it of Skula for Klal Yisrael to be Matzalos from Haman. So it's Chodesh Adar. The Chodesh is significant in terms of being a Zman of Geula. Right? When Shenichdes Adar Marvin B'Simcha, it's a Zman of Geula. So when Shenichdes Adar Marvin B'Simcha, it affects the Chodesh. And it would seem not only that it affects the Chodesh, but the Chodesh was a Gerem, the Chodesh caused, perhaps in the Schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Chodesh caused, was a causative factor in the salvation and not Tzol of Klal Yisrael. So from that standpoint, we're about to come to Rosh Chodesh Adar, Sheni, Hasheni, this week. So from that standpoint, it's already worthy that we should start to look at the lessons of the Megillah. Because these are lessons not only of Purim, but of Chodesh Adar. It's a very fascinating Mishnah on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph, where the Mishnah says the following. Me'heichan Adam Kari Asa Megillah. From where do you start reading the Megillah? From what point? So we find, interestingly, three views. Rameir Oyma Kula. Rameir says, and he's the one that we follow, which is rather surprising, as we'll see, that we read the entire Megillah. Rabbi Yehuda Oymer Me'ish Yehudi. It starts Me'ish Yehudi. And Rabbi Yossi Oymer Me'achar Ador Ma'ilah. Ish Yehudi is the rise of Mordechai. That talks of the advent of Mordechai and his role and how he became significant. And Achar Advarim Eila is the rise of Haman. Now, normally, in normative Shas, we have a Machlokes Ramei and Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. If we have a Machlokes Ramei, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi, normally the halacha is going to be like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is Nimuka Uimo, especially if he's in the Mishnah. So we would have expected that the halacha, if anything, should be like Rabbi Yossi, and certainly not like Rabbi Meir. And yet, we paskin like Rabbi Meir, surprisingly. And we're supposed to read the entire Megillah. The Gemara will make clear later down the page that irrespective of how much we have to read, but the text of the Megillah has to be complete. We have to have a whole text from Vayehi Bimei until Bidore Shalom L'chol Zaro, till the end. It all has to be there. It's merely a question. The Machlokes is not what we have to write in the Megillah that we use, but what we actually read, which part of the Megillah we read, or we read the entire Megillah. That Gemara is going to bring a fourth view. So far we have three. Tanya, Rav Shimon, Ben Yochai, Yom, Rav Yibalai, Lahahu. Shimon ben Yochai says the preliminaries are not necessary. Let's get down to the brass tacks, the action. Right? That's where the Nes of Purim begins. The actual Nes of the Hatzolah. Till then, the pieces are being set up on the board. The pieces to set up the Hatzolah, Mordechai being put in place, the rise of Haman, the threat, all of this, the Suda, the first Suda of Esther, the board is being set. But Balailahu begins to unveil the Rabbeinu Shalom's hand in the Hatzolah of Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, Purim is a celebration of salvation. So the preliminaries are not important. Let's get down to brass tacks. Where does the action begin in the Hatzolah? Balailahu shnodah nodah shnasamelah. Right, that was clearly the turning point in the Megillah. Right, Haman comes, and he's full of himself, ready to hang Mordechai. And what happens is that he's on the way down. By the time the night ends. This is the moment, the climactic, but this is the moment which sets in motion everything that will happen in the rest of the Megillah. So we have four views. The Gemara now comes to tell us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan v'chula mikra echad darshu. All of them base this on an interpretation of one pasuk. But tichtov Esther amalka Mordechai Yehudi is called teikov. Teikov means the principal information. That's teikov. The strength, the teikov. Manda Omar Kulo says the whole thing is Tokfu Shal Achashverosh. So the perspective is on Achashverosh's role. Manda Omar Meish Yehudi Tokfu Shal Mordechai, the role of Mordechai. Manda Omar Me'achar Advorma Eilah is Tokfu Shal Haman. Where did Haman play into all of this? Manda Omar Mevalailahu was Tokfu Shal Nes, the essence of the Nes. When the Nes really gets underway. So it's a question how to interpret what the meaning of teikav. That's the first interpretation of the Gemara. Rav Huna Amar Mehocha, there's another pasuk which leads us to the same place. It says when Mordechai sends the Megillah to them, he writes, what prompted them to act and what were the repercussions? So, Mandi Yom Akulam Aroa Chashverosh and Ishtamis Bekelim Shabbos Amigdash. Why did he undertake to use the defile the Kelim of the Beis Amigdash? So, Mishum the Choshev Shivim Shonim below Ifrik. The 70 years he thought had passed and they weren't redeemed. So, he said the Jews are doomed. They're never going to be redeemed. So, he took out the Kelim of the Beis Amigdash. The Kotel Vashti. He managed to kill his wife. Mandi Omar, Meish Yehudi, Maro Mordechai, the Ikni Bahaman. What did Mordechai do? He violated one of them, really, that made the cardinal principles of Jews and Golas. And that is that we go out of our way not to incite the non-Jewish world. That's a cardinal principle. And Mordechai violated it. What did he violate it? So, Al Kocho on the following, the Shobi Navshi Avodah Zorah, because he put on an icon of Avodah Zorah on his clothes. And therefore he couldn't bow down. As a Tsar, as a government minister, he would have bowed down to him. But as a portraying himself as a religious figure with religious icons, so Mordechai said, this is a Chashash Avodah Zorah. Mordechai Aleim, and what took place? This Rachash Nisa, he was Zoychat Nisim. Mordechai angered Haman, so Haman should have killed him. What prompted his attack on the whole Jewish people? Al kocho mishum de Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachaver. Still doesn't fully explain. There's a pasuk that explains it. Umoegi aleihem v'solu oisav v'esbona v'la'itz. This led to his being hung Now, Mandioma Bibalayla, whom Aroach Hashverish Lahovi as Sefer Azachronis, what prompted him to bring the Sefer Azachronis? Al Kocho de Zaminte Esther Lahoman Bahade. That he was, suspicions were aroused why Esther invited Haman. The Nes took place. But Achashverish, when you have an empire, he lived in revolutionary times. There were always constant plots against the kingdom, constant plots of revolutions. And to be in his position, you had to have a very good secret police. And you had to have a lot of informants, so you knew what was going on every place. He was afraid, it looks like there's some type of plot afoot, because what in the world does Esther have to do with Haman? It looks like a plot, but no one is reporting on this plot. Achashverosh decided that it must be that I didn't pay off an informant. And therefore they said, listen, to be an informant, you're putting your life on the line. So if you're well paid for it, mamela, okay, you take the risk. But if you're an informant and they don't pay you off, then what are you taking the risk for altogether? Listen, they're not after you. Let them kill the king. What do you care? So that's why, Balailahu no didosh nasa melech. And through that, the miracle took place. Now you'll note that there's one that's out of sync here, and that's the one with Mordechai. Shovinavshe, where the Zoram Yigi Aleim Disrachish Nisa. And all the other ones, the first, what they did, is connected with the result. Here, Mordechai didn't bow, and the result was he had a nes. But that's not the result of not bow. He was zoicha to a nes. They seem to be two separate things. And all the other three mandiyom, the other three mandiyomrim, the person did something, and that was the cause. Achashverosh made a suda. That was the cause of killing. That was the cause of killing Vashti. Came from that. Haman went to the king. He was angry at Mordechai. And what happened was, because Dafka, because he went, and because he stirred up things, and then the king started to like Mordechai for that reason, and then he saw that Haman is an adversary of Mordechai's, so he started to hate him and like Mordechai. It came about as a result. The final man, the Omar, Balailahu, it's through Balailahu, that's how the nest came. But there was one man, the Omar, these things seem to be disjointed. That Mordechai didn't bow down to the Avodah de Zorah, and it's Rachish Nisa. So I think that we have to say Pshat in the Gemara is that they are connected. Mordechai was Moisa Nefesh. He refused to bow down to Haman. It's not incidental that he was zocher to a nes. It's dafka because of that mesiras nefesh that the nes came. So, it's to the contrary to what we usually believe. We believe that Mordechai's bowing down created the problem. But ultimately, it was the solution. It wasn't the problem. So that's, in other words, it tells us the role of Mordechai's Mesiras Nefesh. Because Mordechai's Mesiras Nefesh provided the protection for Klal Yisrael and the Golas. This was Haman's plot. It could have been some other plot that came from some other direction. It made no difference. But the Mesiras Nefesh of Mordechai was Matzel Klal Yisrael. That's the way we'll have to read, just to be able to read the Gemara in a consistent fashion, the four Mandi Omrim in the Gemara. So that's a Chiddush already, Leo, no? Chiddush number one for the night. Now, we talk about Tokfo, so it's interesting. So the posterity of Halacha Paskin like Rav Meir. We need Tokfo Shal Achashverosh. It means we have to look, put Achashverosh under the scope. We want to see the role of Achashverosh, where he factored into all of this, from the beginning until the end of the story. From the beginning until the end of the story. Achashverosh, I'll ask you the following question. Who was a bigger Sayyidi of Klal Yisrael and who was more cunning? Haman or Achashverosh? right? We could prove that probably from the Gemara that Achashverosh was the biggest tzaddik of Klal Yisrael. Right, when he asks her at the climax of the Megillah, "Mi huzeh ve'ezeh hu?" Hashem alo liba lasis kain. Says, "Ish tzar ve'oyev homon haro hazeh." The Gemara says that she instinctively pointed to Achashverosh, and Bo Gavriel and pushed her finger, her hand, that it should extend towards Haman. But her instinctive reaction, the truth came out. It's you. Right? So she considered, Esther considered, according to the Gemara, Achashverosh, the greatest Sinai of Klal Yisrael, the greatest Sinai than Haman. The Nesivus and his Perush on Megillas Esther takes up on this. Haman was a thug. So he was a mafioso. You crossed him, he sent his goons, and they eliminated you. That's it. Here he had an important political office, so he had sway over a whole country. He would take out after a few million people. But his calculus was very simple. If you cross me, you're finished. And he had the chevra to carry it out. So he got upset at Mordechai and the Jews. He said, okay, he's going to wipe them out. Achashverosh was a lot wiser than that. Achashverosh said, listen, if you want to attack them as a mafioso, it's not going to work. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam will take up for them. And where are you going to be then? The Rebbeinu Shel Olam has not forgotten his people. Right? Remember, Achashverosh is making a party because he believed in the Novi. The Novi said in 70 years they have to be redeemed. If it didn't come, it means it's not going to happen, because the Novi said it's going to happen in 70 years. That means the Rebbeinu Shel Olam grew angry at the Jewish people and has nullified that promise. So he was a believer in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and a believer in the Novi. Achashverosh. So Achashverosh says to Haman, this is not going to go down the way you think. If you want to start in with the Jews, really, on the physical level, you're going to fail. Rebbeinu Shel Olam wipe you off. What do you have to do? You have to do what Bilam did. You have to engage them in sin, in chet. If you engage them in chet, and particularly licentiousness, right? What did Bilam tell Balak? Eloheim shaleilu sinei zimahu. So get them involved in licentious affairs, and then the road is open. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam will get out of the way. So what does he do? He makes a party to celebrate his defeat of the Jews, and the Beis Hamikdash will not be restored. And he celebrates by taking out the kelim. But there was a deeper kavanah to that too. How could a Jew that truly respected himself and his heritage come to this party? This party was a celebration of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, and Achashverosh's assumption that this was now permanent, it would not be reversed. So how could a Jew come to this? That they made all of that political cheshbonis, and they came, they have to come, and they have to participate. What did Achashverosh want? Achashverosh wanted dafka that they should demean the Beis Hamikdash. If they would demean the Beis Hamikdash, we have a general principle that any mitzvah that a person does, the Gemara spells it out in Tumura. It says that if a person is oiches the sefer Torah arum, is meis arum, will die naked. So the Gemara says meis arum. It's talking about the die arum. No, it says meis arum eisa hamitzvah. If we don't have covered for a mitzvah, then we cannot have the schus of that mitzvah. And we find this many places in Chazal that David HaMelech was old, and they covered him by chasuba begodim. Right, the beginning of Sefer Melachim, right, the very beginning. And why is it Lo Yecham Lo? So Chazal say, because he didn't have derech eretz for begodim. When he came, he surreptitiously arrived where Shaul HaMelech was sleeping. And he could have killed him, and he was his adversary, but he didn't want to kill him. But he wanted to leave his calling card to let him know that he'd been there. So he took his sleeve or whatever, the part of his clothes, and he slid it. So when Shaul HaMelech woke up in the morning, he would realize what happened. He should have found some other way to leave his calling card, but the fact that he disrespected clothing, so the benefit of clothing did not come to him. And we find this many times from Matisyo Shliter, Matisyo Solomon, the Mashgiach of Lakewood. So that's the pshat, the Tosis Yontif, made a Mishaberach for all of those that don't talk in shul. They should have a schus. When did he make it? After the Chmelnytsky uprisings. Because he said that if they hadn't talked in shul, it wouldn't have happened. They would gila lo min ha-shamayim. So, talking in shul is not a good thing. But to say one's chayef misa if one talks in shul, that's a little bit over the top. So what's the pshat? So Rama Desyo Shlita said the pshat is like this. The gzeir of tachvatat was for whatever reason. There was a reason. There was a kitru going to meet us at din on klal Yisrael. The shayla is why the schus of the tefillah didn't save us. The answer is because we didn't have proper derech eretz for a migdash mat for a beis haknesses. So mameila we were not zeicha to the schus of tefillah. So Achashverosh said he's going to bring the Jews to a party and they're going to use the kelim of the beis haMikdash. If they don't have derech eretz for the migdash, then they can't have a schus to have the migdash built for them. This is the final nail in the coffin. So this is what they came to participate in. Secondly, he created a very lewd atmosphere so that people should get involved in illicit relationships. Why? Because Bilam told Balak, Elohim Shalelu Sonei Zima, who the Rebbe Shalom hates Zima, I send you this more than anything else. So if you engage them in that, the Rebbe Shalom will grow angry at them. If the Rebbe Shalom grows angry at them, then Haman could succeed. We could succeed and destroy the Jewish people. So Achashverosh was a lot more cunning, a much greater Sonei of Klal Yisrael, and a lot more cunning than Haman. Haman was a thug. Achashverosh understood the cosmic influences that were necessary, Chalila, to destroy Klal Yisrael. A mafia action is not going to take them out. First you have to involve them in chet, in serious chet. Then the Rebbeinu Shalom will draw away from them, and then we can do what we want. So Achashverosh was the principal Sonei of Klal Yisrael and the greatest Sonei of Klal Yisrael. The Sefer says he understood what he was getting involved in. We have a number of questions. Tomorrow it's a very famous question of Masechta Megillah. Every time there's a Nes, celebration of a Nes, we say Hallel. So how come we don't recite the Hallel on Purim? A very simple and straightforward Gemara in Erech and Daf Yudam Advei says for a Nes, we say Hallel. Right? And the Gemara in Sochem Kufyud Zayin Amar Aleph, I'll call the Tiknun Nevi'im Shevedem, I'll call Torah Shaloi Tovu Aleim, and that Nitzel from it, that they should say Hallel. So why, how come there's no Hallel? This was certainly a Torah Gedoyla. So the Gemara gives three answers to the question. The Gemara says that it's a Nesha B'chutz La'aretz, and after we came to Eretz Yisrael, we no longer sing the Hallel for Nisan that take place in Chutz La'aretz. Or gives another answer that Akati Avdi Achashverosh Hanan. Now we cannot sing Hallel because Hallel implies the full freedom, the full salvation of the Jewish people. When all the dust settled, we were still subjects of the Persian Empire, and Achashverosh was the king, and Yerushalayim was in ruins. So we can't recite Hallel. And finally, the Gemara gives it a third answer, that Kriyasa Zui Halila, the Kriyasa Megillah is Hallel. So the question is, in fact, the Rambam records this answer, Kriyasa Zui Halila, this is what the Rambam records in the Yad. And the Shaila is, what do we need another type of Hallel for? What's wrong with the old Hallel? If it sufficed for Pesach, there's a lot to say about Pesach, but we say Hallel. So why don't we say Hallel on Purim? We need another type of Hallel. So I think the answer is, and we'll see this in a, born out in a Gemara, of the problems that surrounded creating the Yom Tov of Purim, is because Akati Avdei Achashverosh Hanan. Even if it's enough of a nesis to recite Hallel for, not like the Teretz of Akati Avdei Achashverosh Hanan, but factually speaking, was Akati Avdei Achashverosh Hanan. We were subjects of the Persian Empire. And we have to celebrate in a fashion which is consistent with that position in society. If it comes across that this parallels Pesach, we're doomed. We cannot do such a thing in Persia under foreign domination. And the Gemara really makes this clear. Mordav Zayin Amad Aleph in the Gilo, one of my favorite Gemaras. Shulchu lehem Esther lechachamim. Esther sent a message to the Chachamim. So what did she ask for? Kavuni ledoiris. Make a yontov for me. Rashi says, liyontov ulekriya liyos li l'shem. To celebrate that which I was zoicha to be involved in the Nisim. So they sent her back. Shulchu lo kina at mareras aleinu. Do you wish to arouse the enmity of the non-Jewish world, Lebeina Umos, between us and the Alinu Lebeina Umos? And Rashi says, Kinat Mareres Alinu, Sheyemru Uma, Yishonu Smechem Nahaskim Apolosin. The non-Jews will say, listen, the Jews are celebrating the fact that they defeated us. And this is a yearly celebration yet. That's all we need. Right? When all the dust settles, Haman was right. When Mefuza and Mefered Min Ha'amim, and how are we going to defend ourselves? So Esther was relentless, though. And she answered, Shulcho lehem kvark suvani adirei ayom lemalchei modei ofaros. This is a paraphrase of the next to last posik in the Megillah. Right? It's the only place we have modei before poros. Always poros is before modei. Halohem ksuvim ha-sefer. Right here, the posik reads, Halohem ksuvim ha-sefer yesa poroshas Mordechai. For Rosh Hashanah, Mordechai is, where is it written? Hello, I'm Ksuvim HaSefer Divrei Hayom and the Malchei Modei Ofaros. So the Shaila is, according to Rashi, that the problem in the Gemara is that we're celebrating our defeat of the non-Jews. So what is the answer? The defeat, Ramela, we defeated them. But we didn't celebrate. Now that we're making a celebration, we're asking for trouble. Rabbeinu Chananel, on the page, learns different shot. Rabbeinu Chananel says, "Kinat mareres aleinu, kem uchitichta v'tikva l'doris yom u'shoim en adover." This will become famous among the non-Jews of the world that the Jews rose up and they swept away and murdered 75,000, you know, non-Jews, and that's going to make trouble for us. So listen, you did it, mameila. Just let it disappear from history. Don't record it. So she answered them, Kraksuvani, the Sefer Divrei Hayom and the Malchei Modei Ofaros. So what does that mean? It means, listen, it's too late. I'm on the internet already. And they published this in the Shushan Times. That's it. So I'm a Mela, listen, it's recorded for history. Everyone's going to know about it. So I'm a Mela, it's to no avail not to celebrate. And Anesh should be celebrated. But according to Rashi, what's the answer to Gemara? Kinat Moreras Aleinu. So the answer is that we cannot make a Purim a parallel of Pesach. Pesach, we celebrated the defeat of Mitzrayim and our Hatzolah through that. We don't dare do such a thing. Alad Masneicha. What do we have to do? She answered him, I'll tell you what to do. What does this pasuk tell us? This pasuk has always troubled me. What do we want with this pasuk? Halom ksuv ma'sefer divrei hayomim. Chazal tell us there were neviim kiflayim ki yetzim Mitzrayim. Twice as many as yetzim Mitzrayim were the one neviim in Klal Yisrael. But yet we only have 24 svarim, 19 are right of Nach. Why is that? Nevuah shehutzrich l'dayrus, nevuah which we needed to know across all the generations, that's recorded. That which is not hutzrich l'dayrus was not recorded. So I want to know the parashas kedulas Mordechai alom ksuvim asefer divrei hayom malchayim olayer for us. Anyone want to go with me? We're going to make a field trip, and we're going to go to the read the divrei hayom malchayim olayer for us. Anyone coming with me? So I think your first question is going to be, where are we going? Where's this archive? Where does it exist in the world? If it exists, yeah, we'll go. But, you know, go find it. Nobody knows where it is. It disappeared. With the fall of the Persian Empire, it's gone. So now the Shaila is, so good. So do we need to know it or don't we need to know? If we need to know it, it should be in Tanakh. If we don't need to know it, then why bother to tell me about it altogether? Who cares? The answer is, that's what Esther told the Chachamim. We're not making a Jewish holiday out of this. We're going to celebrate the benevolent king that we have in Persia. He's very well-meaning, very benevolent, very protective. You know, and some scoundrel succeeded in deceiving him and led him to make a bad decision about the future of the Jewish people, but the king in his benevolence saw through it, and he rescinded it, and he punished the evildoers. And that's what we're going to celebrate. And that's why it says, "Alom ksuv masefer divrei yom lemalchei modei foros." This is not, doesn't come from anything. It's not a Jewish document. This comes straight out of the king's archives. But this is a synopsis. We're not giving you everything that it says there. Mordechai was a significant political figure. There's a huge ton of material about Mordechai and all his doings in the Persian bureaucracy. But this is just the elements that are important today. But the rest, everything about, well, where does it come from? It comes from Sefer Divrei Ha'am, the Malchei Mordechai. These are Persian documents. And we're celebrating the benevolent king that we have. Well, did they do? It's not a Jewish celebration. That answers many, many issues. That's why the Achashverosh is portrayed in a relatively benign fashion throughout the Megillah. The Emes we have to search for. Sort of like Purim itself. It's a hidden miracle. The Emes is hidden here. One has to put the Megillah under the scope to read in between the lines to find out the real story. But what's written on the lines is very powerful. Very benign to Achashverosh. Shem Hashem is not directly mentioned because this is nothing, it's not Jewish. We can't have a Jewish document. We have a Persian document. So Shem Hashem doesn't belong there. It's not Shem Hashem. And what Achazal have to tell us, so where is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in the Megillah? Every time it says Amelech, and it doesn't say Amelech Achashverosh, so there's just two levels of meaning. One means the King Achashverosh, and one means the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. But he's there only between the lines. On the lines, there's no mention of Achashverosh. Klal Yisrael had to survive in the Golos. In the Golos. We can't have a challah which parallels Pesach. That's doomsday for us. Esther said, we're going to have a challah, yes, but a challah that's fit for the Golos. Krios Zui Halila. We're going to have a Megillas Esther written in such fashion that it's not dafka something Jewish, not a celebration of Jews and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam with us. It's a celebration of the King of Persia. So this is the background of the Sefer. And we study Achashverosh, his role. That he was a very evil man. That he prevailed upon us, or put us in an impossible political situation where many, many of the people in Klal Yisrael felt in Shushan that they had to attend this party. And it was a flat-out attempt to compromise the ruchnius of Klal Yisrael. So this is where we need to start. The story starts from the beginning. What's the beginning of the story? The rise of Haman was one beginning of the story. That's where the troubles began. But that's not the root of the troubles. There's a pasuk in Chumash Bereishis, when Yosef's brothers come to Mitzrayim the first time, so Yosef arrests them, he puts them in jail, and whatever, all the details. So what's their response? Maza osa lokim lona. What has the Rabbeinu Shalom done to us? So Rabbi Yerucham Lvovitz, the Bashkiach of Mir, Zechut Tzadik Lvrocho, says the following. That they were in a politically difficult situation. There's somebody obviously conspiring against them. So who was conspiring against them? What is his agenda? What does he want? And finally, what is there to do about it? And it's a political problem. Right? They've gotten tangled up with the prime minister, the viceroy of Egypt, and he's attempting to frame them, so there must be some agenda here. And the question is, if we divine the agenda, what are we to do about this agenda? That's the response. And yet, they pushed all of that to the side. They said, no, that's not the response. The response is, Maza also lakim lono. What's the Rabbeinu Shalom's agenda here? What does the Rabbeinu Shalom want? Once we understand that which the Rabbeinu Shalom wants, what this is all about, we'll figure out how to deal with the world and its politics. But the world and its politics are not the reflection of the, are not the problem. They're merely a reflection that there is a problem. But that problem is the problem the Rabbeinu Shalom has with us. So Maza Osa Lokim Lono, what does the Rabbeinu Shalom want of us? So when we study to understand Megillas Esther, it's not enough to start from Balayu Bayu that Achar Advorim Ayi Legid Al HaMelech HaShverosh HaSoma Ben HaMadosa. Doesn't help us. That's the political problem. Where did this political problem come from? On what basis? So we need to start in Perek Aleph. Events years before the rise of Haman. What took place? Where we sinned, where we went against the Rabbeinu Shalom. If we divine that, we can conceive of how to do tshuva for it. But without divining that, we're nowhere. So this, Rameya says, we need to study Tokfo Shel Achashverosh. Keep your eye on Achashverosh throughout the story. Because that really, if we understand it, all the way from the beginning of what Achashverosh did, right from the get-go of the Megillah, then we understand what the chet of the Megillah was about, what the chet of that door was. If we understand the chet of that door, then we have a chance to do tshuva for it. And the chance to do tshuva for it and invoke the Rabbeinu Shalom's compassion. And what do we have near the end of the Megillah? When they sent the Megillah to Klal Yisrael, it listed not only the fact that of Haman's decree and on the 14th and 15th of Shushan we were saved from his decree, but the fasting and the tefillahs. So what is this all about? Why was that included in the Megillah? Divrei Hatzoymos B'Zakosim. So we have one very fascinating subject. A very fascinating subject is what is Titus Esther all about? And who enacted it? And why? And on this particular date, now the Tanaisim of Esther actually took place in Nisan, right, surrounding the first day of Pesach. Now why are we marking them at this time of the year? And we don't find in the classical sources anything which tells us what Megillas Esther was about. There is a Medrash Tanchuma, apparently, I think in Parshas Bereishis, if I recall, which does make, in Bereishis or Noach, I don't remember, I think Bereishis, which makes mention of Tainus Esther. It's the only place that I'm aware of that in Divrei Chazal that it appears is in this Medrash. But this Medrash does not seem to have been beforesome by the Rishonim. And the Rishonim struggled. They looked at the Jewish calendar. Lo and behold, on Yud Gimel Adar, everyone fasts. Why are we fasting? So we have all types of pshatim all over the map about what this is about. The Rosh says, the Gemara has an expression that for the 13th day of the 13th day of Adar, Gemara has the first Mishnah in Megillah has 3 extra days for reading the Megillah. Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel for towns. Under certain conditions, they would read either on one of those days, the 11th, the 12th, or the 13th. Gemara has a posik to Rimar, but 2 additional days, the Yud Aleph and Tezvav. So the Gemara says, Yud Gimel does not need a posik. Yud Gimel Zman Kihila Lakoili. It's a time of everybody gathering together. So some learn Zman Kihila Lakoili means it was a day of Mulchoma. That's what Zman Kihila Lakoili is. And on the day of Mulchoma, they used to fast. They have a schus, to be victorious in battle. They would fast. So, Tainus Esther was in commemoration of Yud Gimel Zman Kihila Lakoili. It was not really Tainus Esther. It's in commemoration of what took place as they went into battle. There are other pshatim, Yud Gimel's in Tainus Esther, what Tainus Esther is. There is some, in fact, I think in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch will tell you, I don't know where it comes from in Rishonim. This is a commemoration of the fast of Esther, but it's taking place here in Ador, because we couldn't make it in Nisan. But I don't know, as I said, a source per se, I don't know for that. The Ravid and Sefer Eshkol, I told this once to Rav Shneur Lyman, he was so astounded by it. He said there are varied editions of the Sefer Eshkol, and some are reliable and some are not. So he went to look in what he considers the reliable edition to see if this is there, and he reported back to me that it's actually found there, this pshat. Sefer Eshkol of the Ravid says the following, that what's the reason for Tainus Esther? So we shouldn't forget to read the Megillah on the night of Purim. So I found this always very astounding. We're going to forget to read the Megillah on the night of Purim if we don't have a fast day. Then I lived in Yerushalayim and I understood it perfectly. It goes like this. Yud Gimel is Tainus Esther. In Yerushalayim, Purim is Tezvov. So Yud Dalet is not Tainus Esther and it's not Purim. So what better time to be Mekayim Adar Lo Yodah? So the Ravid was saying that if we let people eat on the day before the Megillah, they start being Mekayim Adar Lo Yodah. And by the time the night of Purim comes, who knows, they won't know themselves where they are. So Enoch Anami, that's how they forget to read the Megillah. That's what I think the Pshat and the Ravid is. So he enacted a fast day that he can't go bombed into Purim. You're going to get bombed, it'll wear off by that time. That's what I think the Ravid means. Is the most creative reason. The most profound reason, and one really that's built into the sources, the Rishon LeKolboy. The Kolboy says the Pasuk Divrei Atzmeis Bizar Kosam, that Purim is a commemoration of 2 things. It's a commemoration of the process by which we were saved, Divrei Atzmeis Bizar Kosam, and a celebration of the Yeshua, of our salvation. A Purim is to commemorate both. We should understand the process by which we were redeemed. It's Divrei Atzmeis Bizar Kosam. They are not peripheral to Purim. We need to understand there was a process, and that process was Divrei Atzmeis Bizar Kosam. That's what brought about our Yeshua. But the Kabbalah says we are a wise people. We can celebrate Purim, we can celebrate Yom HaKippurim. Well, we cannot celebrate both of them on one day. Even the Jewish people can't figure out how to do that, to have Yom Kippur and Purim on the same day. So, Mameila, what we had to do was we followed the order. It was Divrei Atzmeis Bizar Kosam, that came first. So that's Yud Gimel. And Yud Dalet is the celebration. But Yud Gimel is a day of tshuva. Because this is the process, this is the process by which we achieved the victory over Haman. There was a process. So we need to understand, it means tshuva was an inherent part of that salvation. So if we're doing tshuva, we need to understand what was the chet. Chet, so that means on the understanding of the chet was a principal part of our hatzolah. So Prameya, we need to read from Achashverosh from the beginning. see what he was up to and where we stumbled. Then, when we'll come to Divrei HaTzomer, which was our custom, we come to do tshuva, we'll know what to do tshuva for. Then we can be efficacious in the process of tshuva and beseech the Rabbeinu Shalom to have rachma upon us. So that's as much an important part of Divrei HaTzomer, which was our custom. The Mishta of Achashverosh at the beginning is all the rest of the Megillah. If you started from Ish Yehudi, we left out an essential portion, something which allows the entire process to take place and an essential part of the understanding of Purim. We were chaitim and we did tshuva, and the Rabbeinu Shalom rescinded the gzera. That's the notion of Purim. If we start after the chaitim, after the chet, so we missed the boat. We missed the point. So Ramea says, we need talk for Shal Achashverosh. Keep your eye on Achashverosh. Watch the action. Watch what Achashverosh does. From the beginning of the story. So this is a perspective on Megillas Esther, what it is. Why the document was written, how it was written, what function it served. So in time for Chodesh Adar Baruch Hashem, we put the Megillah in perspective. Just what the Megillah is. We haven't delved into the intricacies of the Megillah itself, merely the document itself. Its structure, its format, Shem Hashem is not mentioned, the benign treatment of Achashverosh. Just we put the Sefer in a general view, in order, what it is. Good night, Rabbi Yisrael. How you doing, Rabbi?